This is The Women of Letters, a podcast dedicated to the TV show Supernatural and everything fandom.
To episode 50, drumroll please. Episode 50 of The Women of Letters with me, Jules from the Super Wiki, and Amy from Sweet on Dean and SBN Con Tips on Tumblr.
I am on there a lot lately. You people out there ask lots of questions.
But all your best tips about things at conventions, go to SBN Con Tips. Mm-hmm. We might put a link up. I think we have before, but we'll do it again. We'll put a link up in the comments. But it's episode 50 of what started out as
a little hiatus thing
where we had a half hour chat about stuff, and it was never a half hour because we talked too much. And 2 years later, we're still talking stuff. But we're very, very cleverly organised, so we don't do every episode or every week. We do it when we feel like it, which is pretty often.
Yeah, which is usually every episode or or every second episode. Depends really at what pointy end of the season we're at.
And what's happening in our lives.
And what's happening in our lives. Which can be quite busy.
Melbourne and Sydney.
True.
And how much we had to drink during the week, and many things like that. What our dogs are doing.
Mm-hmm. Mine's chewing a bone on the couch.
I do have to share with everyone, and Amy has witnessed this. When I was in Vancouver this year, I bought a little toy squirrel from a pet shop for my dog Lola, and I have called the squirrel Jensen, of course, and now I have trained my dog, when I say go get Jensen, to go get her squirrel, and it's the most adorable thing.
And I'm going to utilise her at some point. Go get Jensen!
Oh. So next time Jensen's in Australia, I'll be able to just go get Jensen, and Lola will go and find him.
And he'll go, that's so adorable, until he's dragged to one of our homes. Not so adorable anymore.
If you met Lola, she wouldn't be dragging anyone anywhere.
True.
She'd be just like, pat me, pat me, pat me. I don't know why I'm in to get you, Jensen, but just pat me. Anyway, enough about the hilarity of our dogs. Your dog's even cleverer, though, because Buffy puts her toys away in a toy box.
That today. It was pretty exciting. She put her armadillo that my friend Angie bought from Texas when she was in Texas. She put it away in her toy box today.
Just a quote from this week's episode, Buffy is a dog who thinks she's people.
I was like, oh, okay. She's tidying up after herself. Awesome.
That's very, very clever.
It was a little bit weird, but clever.
But we're going to talk this week about this week's episode, Our Little World, or probably a quick recap of last week's episode, Thin Lizzy. Mm-hmm. And the wonderfulness of our show generally. And shout out to everyone who's in Pasadena at the moment. Amy and I have just been, it's karaoke is going on as we're recording this. So we've just been looking at photos of the amazing Ruthie Connell as Princess Leia.
She's looking absolutely amazing with her bun hair.
Yes, and the karaoke kings were dressed in suits and ties and Amy and I thought, well, they're not the Blues Brothers because they haven't got the pork pie hats on.
No matter how many people tried to tell me that they were.
And I was thinking maybe Men in Black or Reservoir Dogs, and apparently they're the Reservoir Dogs, although someone told me they were from Dr. Seuss. That really weird version of Dr. Seuss that has men in suits in it who possibly kill people.
Well, that really rhymey version of Reservoir Dogs.
Maybe that's updated for the American market. Anyway, so when we were last with Supernatural,
we were full of squeam baby.
We were full of squeam baby, and then last week we had the wonderful Thin Lizzy. Loved a bit of having a bit of Lizzie Borden in there. It did actually bring up for me the fact that there was a Lizzie Borden TV series on this year.
There was too. Did you watch that?
Yes, I did watch that.
And what was that? It had what's her name? What's her name? I can't think of her name.
Christina Ricci.
Oh, yes, that's her name.
I think I want to say it was Christina Ricci.
Yeah, and, I want to say that too.
There was a supernatural connection because I'm going to forget who it was now. Was it Christina Ricci who was in it?
Yeah, I'm sure it was Christina Ricci. Yeah, I think it was.
Anyway, he wasn't very good. I watched probably 4 or 5 episodes. Mm. It wasn't terrible, but it was...
Not very good.
Maybe I'm being a bit mean to it. It was better than... Anyway, it's been cancelled, so... You know.
So it wasn't very good, basically.
It was a bit strange. But she did kill people. And, of course, the story is a true story that Lizzie Borden took an axe and gave her mother 40 whacks and then killed her father as well. And she was actually she was charged, but I can't remember if she was acquitted or found not guilty.
She was never charged.
She wasn't charged.
No, and it wasn't 40. It was not. I think it was 17 or 18 for the mother, and 19 for the father. And it's a stepmother, and 19 for the father who was on the couch. The stepmother was upstairs, and the father was on the couch.
And she continued to live for the rest of her life in the town where
in that town,
and
ostracized.
I do love that they had it in this episode and that it brought up again Sam Winchester's fascination with serial killers.
I know, and how much it wigs Dean out, which is really weird that would wig him out, but it wigs him out.
I think it's adorable.
I do too. I think it's really adorable. I'm like, Dean, you've killed like so many people. Why does this wig you out? But I do think it's adorable too. He's like, my brother's creepy.
I actually have a theory on it.
Okay, go for it.
It's a bit of a theory about why many people, possibly myself, get interested in serial killers. Because, you know, next to the sort of things that happen in Supernatural, the serial killer is sort of become representative of sort of chaotic, unexplainable evil. You know, the sort of stuff that's beyond, you know, almost, you know, comprehension that one person could do. And so the stories about it and them being caught or whatever are a sort of like any murder mystery, I suppose, about us trying to contain and believe that this stuff is understandable, you know, and people are always looking for, you know, the classic trope in movies is you find out they're abused as a child or something terrible happened to them. And so I think it actually really fits with Sam Winchester because, you know, of everything they've gone through in their life, in some ways a serial killer and the stories around them being caught and Sam being fascinated with the statistics is about control and about, you know, compared to angels and demons and leviathans, serial killers in some ways are a horrible, terrible evil that can be understood.
And sorry. Yes.
That's my theory. Plus he's, you know,
excuse me.
Plus yeah, I think
Well, he likes reading and researching and stuff. So that also plays into it, I think.
And the darker side of it could be for anyone is again, like any murder mystery, they represent what we would, you know, in our darker psyche would like to do, which is let go and break society's rules, i.e. become a serial killer. So, you know, I can see Sam sort of, again, you know, because of both him and Dean's history of sort of there being a fascination and perhaps a way of reflecting on himself and trying to understand himself and his own darkness by looking and reading these stories. That's just my theory. My friends just tell me I'm creepy.
Well, that's basically what Dean's saying as well.
It's like, you know, with all we go through, why can't you just be into sports? Of course, Dean loves horror movies. So,
this is true, he does. But he also likes Speed 2.
Sorry?
He also likes Speed 2.
That's true. But then again, we know they've both watched The Breakfast Club, so...
Yeah.
They did watch a lot of crappy TV in motels growing up,
yeah,
so...
Yeah, they did. Not that The Breakfast Club is crappy TV.
Yes, it is. leave this discussion for another podcast. Do you want to get a drink, Amy?
No, I was joking at you saying that. was comedic choking, Jules.
Oh, okay. Yes, don't get me started. Mm. Anyway, let's get on to... So I did want to... One thing I... Will I bring it up now or once more? Well, I might leave it till we start talking, because there are a few couple of things that happened in Thin Lizzy that I think really relate to this week. And, of course, you know, the main one was that, you know, Amara has been out and about.
Sucking souls.
And we got to see the results of that and people being soulless, and particularly Paul Len.
I really liked him.
I thought that was, you know, he was a fascinating character too, wasn't he? Because he knew something was wrong with him, and he was trying to sort of act like he should, but, you know, it became clear that...
he wasn't right and something was happening inside him. But I really like that, and I like how they're representing the soullessness of people in this season, which, I mean, we've seen, obviously we saw Soulless Sam, and then we saw the people who got their souls removed when they were collecting them for Abaddon, Mother Soul Hubbard, and they, oh, your episode, and they and they all were pretty violent and went crazy. But I actually like that we're seeing this kind of difference in how people are affected by having their souls removed, which I think is great, because really everybody's different. And if you know, everybody should react differently. Not everybody's going to become a murderer. And I think we've had this conversation before where maybe Sam didn't come and was more controlled because he's actually had, you know, those outlets of violent outlets in his life.
Exactly, and he's dealt with those impulses, whereas for other people, even Goldie in this week's episode, not having the soul, if you like, is a bit like the superego, but, you know, the break being removed, and so you can act on those impulses, which is not to say everyone is walking around, you know, as a meat suit full of rage. But,
no, exactly. I mean, Len wasn't. He knew there was something wrong, but he was trying to go about his business as usual, which I think was probably also a bit of a reflection on who he was, a little bit of a misfit anyway in society,
yes.
Who probably
so
has
he was,
to
used
work.
To try-
trying to fit in and used to trying to, you know, be somebody else for people and all those kind of things. But even Sydney reacted in a different way as well. And though she became violent, she became vengeful violence because she actually felt better for it because she no longer had the bad dreams and the horror feeling horrific from all the terrible things that happened to her when she was growing up. So for her, it was like a weight off her to get rid of the soul. Get rid of her soul. And I really like that they're actually looking at how people are reacting differently to having their soul removed, and they're not just becoming, you know, crazed killers.
Yes, which makes it believable then that there can be people out there, you know, living without souls that that Amara has affected, and hence why Crowley is sending his minions out to kill them as well. Because
you don't know what they're going to do.
Or say, obviously.
Or say. Yeah, because they don't care.
Well, yes, and if they're, yes.
Like Len said, he did actually feel that there was this thing bubbling up inside him, and he didn't feel like that was going to be something that he could continue to control, no. Which is why he had himself locked away for all those crimes.
I think, I think the propensity for violence is probably high.
Yeah.
Which actually does bring me to the thing I wanted to link from last week's episode, which was the fact that we've seen sort of a return in Dean of some callousness and coldness of wanting to kill and, you know, certainly not near the Demon Dean levels, but there were a number of times last week about Len when he said, oh, that's right, we can't kill him because he hasn't done anything yet. And
but then when he was in the moment with Len, he was actually quite empathetic because that was something that Dean completely understood that and you know, sort of saying to him, I know there's a darkness in you, but if there's anything else at all inside you, maybe there's hope. And that's something that Dean can completely relate to because even though he was being eaten up by the Mark of Cain at the end of season 10, he had it shred enough of himself in there to find that in order to not kill his brother and to take a different road. So I actually, I, I didn't actually see it as being callous in that particular. I think in this week there was a little bit more of it, but I didn't see it as callous in as sort of like, oh God, and Sam and his plan, you know.
I think there were just a couple of times when it and look, you know, it reads either way, but I think if you add last week to this week, then there's certainly signs of you know, and when they're interrogating the demon this week, and Sam says, "Oh, we can exorcise him," and Dean sort of eye rolls, and it's like, really?
So that did enjoy killing that demon.
Yeah, and I mean, that's interesting to know where that, you know, obviously it's something to do with his connection with Amara and their connection through the mark, even though he doesn't have it anymore. So I'm. And I think, again, as you and I often say, the fact that it's not overt probably means that Dean also is not entirely sure what's going on. Because so he's not like walking around frothing at the mouth filled with bloodlust. And it's not like when the mark was really starting to assert itself. It's more these little things that, you know, on a bad day could be Dean Winchester anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whereas, I think there's enough uncertainty and ambiguity there, but it definitely seemed this week like there is that coldness sort of creeping in. But, you know, then again, we open the episode with him calling Cass and being full of empathy.
Exactly.
Not wanting to call Cass, you know, and saying to you know, Sam, give the guy a break. I did love the whole, like, Sam's like, you've got to call Cass.
I know, call Cass, Dean.
You've got to phone too, Sam, but it's like, he's your friend.
No, he's your yours. Angel. You phone him. I know. But I do think that there's always been that element of Dean as well, as you say, where he's just like, you know, like they've been killing demons like that for such a long time now. And we've spoken about how it's become this kind of pragmatic reaction for that. They just, you know, this is the way we deal with this. And there's just no black and white and there's no grays anymore. We, you know, if they're a problem, we kill them. And I mean, I do also think that that's going to be a hard habit for Dean to break. Not so hard for Sam,
yeah,
you know, but I do think that that's going to be a very hard habit for Dean to break. And I do know what you're saying, and I do think that because I thought he was very cold with the demon this week. But then part of me kind of thinks a lot of the eye rolling and stuff is like Dean Winchester trying to, you know, reel himself in from years of just stabbing people.
Yeah,
before the mark.
I think there's definitely both things here, and as I said, I don't think it's unambiguously. I think it's probably just something that's there, and maybe it isn't. Maybe it is just Dean reacting to trying to do things
how he's always, you know, done stuff.
Follow
and
Sam's
going,
revised or returned mission statement.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, and maybe that's the contrast. I did think it was funny that, you know, in the end, Sam did have to kill a demon, and it's like, well, two out of three
ain't bad. I'm like, Sammy, you're gonna, and I mean, that demon was so smart when he's like, "You're a hunter, man. You know what? What do you do? What is this new no kill policy? You should know better." And I was like, "You should know better, Sam. You should know better, because you're gonna end up getting hurt because they're demons, you know, and they don't care and they're strong and." And yeah, I was a little bit, that actually, when I saw that going down, I was like, oh, I'm a little bit worried about how far he's taking his new policy, in that it's actually could end up endangering him in the very least, you know, if he's not careful.
I think demonstrated
his new mission statement.
Yeah.
Feels like Jerry Maguire or something.
The vision and values for Team Winchester.
He's written a memo.
It'll be in their annual report.
Oh, I love, by the way, those annual report demons. I freaking love that scene. That was genius, how about the legalization of marijuana has reduced.
Oh, that got me thinking. Like, what would be the theory behind legalized marijuana reducing the number of souls that they get, because people are just too stoned to care about making deals.
Oh, that's what I figure. People are just too stoned to care about things as much as they used to.
Well, they're happier.
They're happier.
They're happy
sleepier
with their... Well, they're happy with their lot, so they don't feel a need to make
I freaking love that whole scene where they're talking about
projections,
you know,
and
projections and theories, and you know the analysis says, and I'm like, oh my god, this is unreal.
My new career aspiration is an analyst in hell. I would fucking own that shit.
I love that scene.
You should imagine the graphs I could do. I'd be so
you
cool.
Would love it.
I'm off to do a spreadsheet on souls now.
But anyway, we jumped ahead. That scene was just one of many unbelievably just little moments that, you know, were not big moments and not important to the plot or really or anything, but just really nice texture in the actual scene.
Yeah.
So well done.
Yes. I loved the – so when they get to the – back after the hill, Len's been killed at the beginning. Oh, so just to go back to Dean calling Cass, though, because – and I was, you know, mentioning that was a sign of, you know, a lot of empathy. And
he's been there. We've all been there.
We've all been there. But I felt so much for Cass. I thought this was really, you know, to see the sort of whatever PTSD, if you want to call it,
anxiety attack,
suffering the impact of Dean nearly killing him, him nearly killing Dean, everything that's been going on, and you know, I'm glad he's got the, you know, he's had the sanctuary of the bunker, and I hope he changes the sheets and everything before Sam gets home, because I think the room will be a bit whiffy by now.
I know. Well, I don't know. Do angels have BO? I don't know. They don't shower. He can just auto-clean.
I don't know.
I wish I could auto-clean. That would be awesome.
Well, we know he can auto-mend his clothes.
Yeah, so he must be able to auto-clean. And then he's clean, you know.
And I like the fact that Dean having a dig, because, you know, he's gone off list as far as quality TV goes.
I know, he's watching Jenny Jones.
Can't eat caviar all the time. It's like...
But it made me laugh, though, as well, because it was almost like the show looking at its fandom looking at the show, because so many fans have binge-watched Supernatural when they're having a bad time, you know, and how many of us have said, the show got me through the shittiest of times. We've all been there. We've all done that. We've all watched hours and hours and hours of it because we, you know, it makes us feel better and we don't have to deal with anything else. And it was, I thought it was the show being incredibly self-reflective.
I think also maybe Bob Behrens has done that too.
I'm sure Bob Behrens has done that.
For some reason, can imagine Bob sort of say, "I've just stayed in bed and binge watched for a week."
Maybe not Jenny Jones.
I don't know why I'm projecting that onto you, Bob, if you've never done that. I apologize.
I apologize, Bob, too, but I feel like I bet you have.
Of course, he would have done it with Buffy. He loves Buffy, so I can imagine him.
I just like my dog. He did it with my. He watched TV with my dog. No, wait a minute, that's not right.
The dog who thinks it's people.
I've binge watched Buffy.
Anyway, I did love that whole interaction and leading to Cass and his, like, you know, trying to leave or not leave, and not being able to leave.
Having a little anxiety attack at the top of the stairs was very sad.
And then we're in the station. I was glad to see that the detective had actually survived a week. You see the character from week to week. It was like, go you.
I really liked that we were in the same town for the 2 weeks running, that we referred to Len, and that when we went to the jail, we had the same cop. I really liked that. Like, I was like, oh, wow, we actually, like... stayed in the same place for a little bit. I really enjoyed that aspect of it. He actually tweeted me and Karen today. Me and our friend Karen, the actor who plays that cop.
He said, my God.
Yeah, I know, because we'd tweeted out a photo and he'd seen it. I'm not even sure how. But he tweeted back saying, oh, yeah, that scene was cut, which was a promo pic. But he said that it had been a very wet day and Jensen had been his weather guard. Shielded him from the rain because he's a lot bigger. And it was very sweet. I was like, oh, that's very sweet. But anyway, I really liked that continuity of being in. That doesn't happen. How often does that happen? We're in the same town for 2 weeks in a row, and we get that cop again.
I mean, you know, it's very rare that we've had that continuity with you know, like police officers or anything. So that was nice. And then I loved the whole setup with the devil's trap in the cell. I thought that was.
And I loved the fan art that followed it.
Although, I don't understand what the question is. I'm pretty sure they have ladders in police stations.
Like they'd etched it onto the ceiling, scraped it in with something. But, yeah, I'm pretty sure they probably went and ran and got them a ladder or something. But anyway, the fan art of Dean on Sam's shoulders and Sam going, you've got to lay off the pie.
Discussion of if it was, like, the hardest thing to do. It's like, none of you people live in... you know, houses with ceilings. I mean, I have to stand on the top rung of my ladder to change a light bulb, so maybe I don't know. Ladders, people, they're a thing.
Sam has got long arms as well, and he is quite tall, really.
Sure, but I can understand that he couldn't do it. It was just fandom's reaction as if it was magic to get it on the ceiling. Yeah, no.
Yeah, no, not really.
Anyway, yes, so I did.
So explaining that would have been tricky. Can we just borrow a ladder? Just going to draw.
Well, then, of course, though, yes, it's probably more to the question how they got the cops on side.
I thought that was pretty interesting, especially if they actually did do it on each other's shoulders. That would have been really funny.
That would have been a good scene. Actually, I will mention, because we then go to Cass watching TV and there's the news footage and that's how he works out where Metatron is. So just talking about cut scenes, because I was in Vancouver when they were filming this episode and we saw Misha filming a scene, which I now think was probably him speaking to that newscaster outside the news station.
Right. So there was a film we finding saw... Metatron's address.
Yeah, so there was a film we saw being a scene we saw being filmed with him walking up to speak to a woman next to a car
between two buildings, which didn't make it in.
No, so it wasn't anything in. So I can only imagine that was where it was. And then the other scene we saw the same day saw being filmed was the scene in the alleyway when he confronts Metatron over the body. But it's it's always fascinating to see, as you know, what you've watched being filmed end up. And we actually watched the whole of that scene being filmed, which took probably 5 to 6 hours, the alleyway scene, and it was in an alleyway in downtown Vancouver. And, you know, when you think, you know, that's five hours for, you know, less than 3 minutes of television. It's a lot of work, people. It's a lot of work.
Yep.
Totally. And that was, you know, and that's 5 hours of Misha and Curtis having to stand around, and, you know, the only breaks they got were when they reset for lighting and stuff like that. And what you only just saw briefly at the end, you know, there's a police car pulls up and they had to do that, you know, a dozen times. And, anyway, interesting to get to see the process of the making thereof. It's a long process.
Yeah, it's long and very boring. Also, my dog just barked. Long and very boring process, really. I think it is anyway. I go, oh my God, shit, it's so boring. Unless, you know, like I didn't, you know, the time I got to watch them, of course, it wasn't boring at all because Jensen and Jared were doing mucking around. So that was not boring, even remotely. But it must be terrible. It must get terribly boring for them, though. No wonder they do naughty stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, this was... there wasn't much else to do, and this was literally in an alleyway, Video Village, and that was in like must have been the back entrance to one of the buildings off the alleyway. You know, this was not luxurious,
not luxurious shooting.
the trailers and that. I think they might have only had one or two. They certainly had craft services there, but you know, it wasn't like
very important.
Misha could go into his trailer and soak in the hot tub for a while between jobs. So yeah, I mean, it is interesting, and we were lucky that night to have a lovely PA called Laura, who was on crowd control, which was us, who played with us and had us got us in yelling action, quiet please, and you know, it was, and Misha snuck up on the crowd at one point, but you just think, wow, this is what they do, you know, all day, every day. These are long days, and it wasn't raining, but it was cold-ish. And luckily we were fans, and we were on holidays.
Yeah. Woohoo!
I wasn't standing in the middle of an alley for hours. I did feel, having seen the close-ups now, that poor guy lying on the alley covered in fake blood.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he was down there for hours.
Oh, poor thing.
And if we couldn't...
It's a sucky job.
It's a really, we couldn't tell job. From where I was that he was also, you know, covered in blood, but it's like, oh god, that's a great gig.
No, it's not.
No. Anyway. Back to show.
But that's great, because I thought that when I was watching it, I was like, oh, this is the scene they watched shooting, because I knew that you were in an alleyway and it was Misha and
Curtis. And they dressed it with, there was a cross on one side, lighting up something of someone or other's, you know, refuge or whatever, and
mission,
the whole
something first mission, yeah, or something mission,
and all the cyclone wire at the back, that was all dressed as well. So it's also interesting to see, because it's an alleyway like many alleyways that have appeared on Supernatural, and so it's interesting then also to see what they can do to make that alleyway look different than last time, times you saw it. And it did, you know, it looked very different, and the way it was lit was different, and because you didn't get to see it, because there's a lot of those alleyways in Vancouver and they do look very similar.
They do. They all look kind of, you walk down any of them, you go, oh, I think the show shot here, or this one, or possibly this one, because they all look kind of the same.
Yes. So anyway, that was my little story. But back to... where are we? Back to the boys.
We're with Cass.
And they're back in the motel, which had changing channels wallpaper.
It did. And it actually looked exactly like the motel. Is it the motel where I think it was the episode where Bobby was the ghost in the house? Because with them sitting by the window, and there was a bathroom right behind them.
Yeah, yeah.
It was very similar anyway. I think it was the same layout. I think they reused. Recycled that hotel set. Someone did tell me that wallpaper was upside down in that shot.
Ooh, I'll have to have a look.
Yeah, and not the same way up. Yeah. As changing channels, and I saw Jim Michael's tweet. We had leftover.
Yes, and I saw Jerry say it. Wanek say it was one of his favourites. So that's why he wanted to pay homage to it.
Do you know, I really liked that scene, because I really loved when Dean came back and Sam was like, "Where'd you dump the body?" And Dean was all sassy, went in the schoolyard, you know, and then he's like. And then he laughs and goes, in a hospital car park. But I really like that, because I always wonder about that stuff. Where do they dump the bodies? How do they clean up after themselves? So I really liked just that little tiny, you know, little bit of detail in that scene to find out that they actually have these discussions of, where are you going to put the body? Where are we going to dump it this time, you know?
And I think we've had that discussion that on the commentary for at the end of the end, and I think it's Bob Singer who says, you know, talks about that we never get to see the cleanup crew.
Yeah, yeah, except that one time in the outtake with Sam and the bucket.
Yeah. but, of course, vaguely related, there's a new series coming up which is based on going to be a series based on the people who are the cleanup crew for the Avengers.
Oh yes, that's right. That's a big job. They would have to rebuild cities.
Yeah. So yes, watch for that coming to some network near you sometime.
Or possibly online.
Hey, CW, you could do someone, you know, maybe the Winchesters need a clean-up crew.
They do, the Supernatural clean-up crew.
Mr. Wolf. Mr. Wolf, who was the clean-up crew in Pulp Fiction.
Yep,
Pulp Fiction.
Yep, they could. Definitely.
Call me. I have ideas.
Oh my gosh. But I did, that whole scene was really cool with when they're looking at the map and the whole point of interest thing. What's this POI stand for?
Well, again, it was that nice little just sort of normal banter between.
Yeah, it was.
Like, you know what it means? I know what POI is.
What is it? Oh, okay, I'll find out.
Sam.
Yeah, it was a really nice little scene. That whole scene was a lovely little scene.
Well, and then them going off and...
And the summer of love.
Oh, forgot about you and Crowley and your summer of love.
There was sounded a little bit jealous.
Well, look, you know, it was another one of those episodes where it was. I'm reminded that basically everyone in the world loves Dean Winchester in one way or another, because we had Cass, we had Crowley, we had Amara.
Yeah, I get it.
I know, but sometimes it's like, Dean, you mightn't have a myth arc, but everyone loves you.
He's had myth arcs up the wazoo lately.
Yes, I do know. But yes, yeah, so yes, no, I did like that. And I love the way they, and I assume with VFX, redress the front of Riverview Asylum.
Oh my God.
Needham Asylum.
Wow, that looked amazing. Is that just the normal front section? Was that just the normal front section of Riverview?
I think so, because someone did post a photo of what it
was. I think it was. Because have you been there?
No, I haven't.
Oh, I've been there. And yeah, it looks creepy anyway. But I was like, is that it? Because it's got the big long stairs going up. But it was just so creepy that I was like, oh my gosh, they really did a great job.
Yeah, no, excellent. Excellent work there. And the fact that the whole interior of Crowley's lair is built on the set.
I know.
So they just use the external, and then all that is built on the set, remembering that they also have the bunker on the set as well. I mean, that's a lot of building.
It's a lot of building. And then they build everything else, like roadhouses and stuff like that. You know, it's just crazy. But, yeah, I thought the exterior of the asylum looked really, really great, really authentic, abandoned asylum. Yeah, it was really cool, and I loved all the stuff. I love Crowley's lair. Crowley's lair is awesome, and I love that Dean knows why he's there and not in hell.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that was a nice little nod to, you know,
and people have been saying, why is Crowley not got Amara trapped in hell, locked down in hell? You know,
well, and I mean, it's a question that's come up a number of times over the seasons when Crowley's had obviously earthbound lairs, and so I thought it was a nice little nod to that.
Obviously, it
works easier for the story if people don't have to be breaking into hell all the time. Yeah. It fits with Crowley's character as well.
Very much so. Yeah,
he wants to be near the action on Earth. He sort of found out that being king of hell is, you know, less exciting. As you said, he has to go over the quarterly figures, he got it all under control, and now it's like,
and now he's got hardly anybody left because this team that he's been looking after has been eating them all. and all his conversations with her, like when she came back and he grounded her, and you know, just, and then he had the big conversation about, I saw Mark Shepherd saying, I have had this conversation with my team. But it was just, it rang so true. It was like this very parental conversation with a rebellious teen. You know, I'm not, you know, I'm trying, I don't know what I'm doing here. You know, I it's all in your best interest, and, you know, all the typical kind of parental things that they, you know, say. And I thought it was
very funny. Very clever of Crowley, because I think that's something all along we've known, that Crowley's not stupid, you know, and he's never been blinded by his ambition or whatever, and he's quite canny, you know. He knew early on that the Winchesters were trouble, and you know, would probably be his downfall, but also the fact
that,
you know,
they're gonna be,
yeah. He knows that she's going to be more powerful, and that threatening her or whatever is, you know, he can tell even before she demonstrates her power that being heavy-handed with her, so to speak, and treating her like an actual teenager wasn't going to work, because, you know, she will very soon be more powerful. So he has to prove his use and his worth to her in that way. And of course, then he makes a mistake of touch, you know, hurting Dean, which
Dean Winchester.
No. But I thought that was, and it did play. Look, if anyone's been to a con or watched any of the con footage with Mark, one thing he excels at is talking and relating to children. It's one of the amazing things when he can be as salty and snarky and mean to everyone. And he will still be that with kids, but he relates to them so well. Yeah. He gets them, they get him. And everyone's often, you know, very surprised at how well he can connect with younger people. So there was sort of, I was thinking of that when Crowley was attempting to connect with Amara. And I have to say, the young actor who played her this week, Samantha Isler. Oh my God, she was just, she had that intensity of both a teenager and a deity. And I thought, you know, God, how would you feel getting what's obviously she's had a number of roles, but you know, probably her biggest role, and you're asked to, yeah, you're asked to play a billion-year-old deity,
yeah,
who's also a teenager. So yeah, you'd be like, okay, whatevs.
I thought she was great. I thought she did such a good job.
Yes. Very hard, I think, to pitch that right. You could play it too brashy and too teenagery, and that's not going to run because she is a god. And so I think she had a stillness
and
a power in her that you know, she's not scrabbling for things, she's not bargaining, she knows
she doesn't need to. She's self-aware of who she is and how powerful she's going to become or already is. And that's, I think, stillness is a great word. She has a stillness about her that I actually find the scariest part of her is that she's, it actually really reminded me of Lucifer, how Supernatural wrote Lucifer. Mm. We only once saw Lucifer lose his shit, which was in Hammer of the Gods when he killed all the gods. Yeah. But the rest of the time he was written very calmly. He was a very calm, still character. Yeah. He wanted something and he went about what he had to do to get what he wanted, but he didn't, you know, there was no histrionics, there was no overt evilness, there was nothing like that. He was a very still and calm character, and I think that's for me, Amara really reminds me of how they wrote Lucifer, which I think is kind of cool.
Yes, no, definitely. And then, of course, we've got Sam and Dean have got into the lair. We have Cass confronting Metatron. And I have to say, it is a toss-up, but I think I'm going to go with the Cass and Metatron scene as my absolute, like, favourite of the episode, and certainly up there with my favourite for the season, because I just thought, I mean, Curtis just...
He was great.
Fucking hell, that man. He just...
I was like,
so his hair was really on point, I have to say.
Everybody's hair has been on point this season. Everyone's hair has been on point this season. But I love that scene as well. I really loved Cass. I thought Misha did a really great job with the intensity of Cass, and also that you know, you knew that Cass wanted to beat the crap out of him but didn't want to beat the crap out of him, and that kind of ambiguity in how he's feeling about Metatron, and you know, almost in moments you think he's feeling a bit sorry for him, and then, I'm not going to get fooled by you, I know you're manipulating me, and then you're kind of like, oh, I don't actually know if Metatron is manipulating right at this particular second. He was before, but now he's like, he was very tragic.
Well, and just his, the writing and his whole rant about
media.
There was a line about, what was it? GIF length glimpses into degradation and horror, and the fact that reality is the great literature of our age, and I am the author of reality. I mean, it was just wonderful writing,
and
I mean, it had the that wonderful sort of madness and lovely again that it continued the theme that we've always had with Metatron about stories and storytelling.
Yeah.
So.
Because no, even Cass said, I don't want to hear your story. I'm not here to hear your stories, you know, and as he kind of went off and ranted. And of course, he's all sort of bluster and you know, like his normal self until he's kind of in this very weakened moment and you hear about what his life is really like, trying to make the rent and, you know, all these terrible things of living as a human. You know, he was criticizing Cass for taking a job pouring Slurpees, but, you know, he's having just as much trouble trying to live as a human in this very tough human world when he's been able to do absolutely anything he ever wanted before.
Yeah. Wonderful. I don't know if you've seen the film Nightcrawler with Jake Gyllenhaal.
No, I have not.
So he plays in that a character similar to who Metatron is. He's a guy looking for a place in life, and he discovers this world of freelance videographers who basically go around and film car crashes and stabbings in LA and sells it to nighttime news. And like Metatron and his, you know, pulling himself up by his bootstraps, the Nightcrawler's imbued with all this sort of Ayn Randish and rantings and business, like it's like MBA meets psychosis stuff, because he's always looking at, you know, the business plan for what he's doing when what he's doing is actually out filming, you know, people's suffering.
Yeah.
And I'd love to see the inspiration that was drawn from that. And I want a Marv Core hat. I love this.
I love that he's still using the name Marv. I was like, oh, he's still using the name Marv. God love him. But, you know, as much as I was going, oh, he's, you know, he's become this quite pathetic character. And, but I still couldn't find myself feeling bad for him.
I was kind of like,
you really are hideous, and he's hideous, and it's just he's so well done. And so, like you said, the writing was beautiful, and he's such a beautifully written character, and Curtis Armstrong is just so wonderful in the part. Oh. They cannot kill him, because as much as I cannot stand Metatron, he's just awful. I just sit there and go, oh, he's just the worst of the worst kind of people or whatever he is these days. But he's so fabulous and so fascinating and so much fun to have in a scene, and so fun to hear him say those words, because he spits them out so beautifully. Even Jensen was like, oh, my God. He tweeted something about Curtis.
You know, then Cass getting to that point when he just gives in to his rage and starts beating the shit out of him.
It was such a strong scene.
Yeah, I mean, and again, I just feel so much for Cass, who just feels so, you know, lost at the moment. And then
and Metatron's spot on. You know, everybody's been pulling Cass's strings for a really long time.
Oh yeah, yes.
And you know, and that's the thing with him, he always knows exactly what to say to Cass, and Cass knows it, because he's saying, you know, I'm not going to let you manipulate me anymore. But you can see that it's resonating with Cass, because Metatron knows exactly what to say, and it's not lies.
Yes, poor Cass. Anyway, meanwhile, back in Crowley's lair, Sam manages to take out two of the three.
Without killing
them.
Yeah, I was like, well, do you think, did they exercise them at the end, or did they just make a beeline out of there as quickly as they could and left those guys all trussed up on the floor?
Well, I don't think they would have stopped for an exorcism. Did remind me, though, they need to return to a trick that they use. In fact, Sam did use in Mother's Little Helper, which is the pre-recorded exorcism.
Yeah, they do need to do that.
He could have
just left that on the floor and walked
away.
That's
what I thought. They could get some, like, burner phones or whatever that they've recorded that on, and then just play it. That could come in handy.
I'm interested to see that Dean still has one of Crowley's voice messages on his phone.
Because it was the summer of love.
He hasn't deleted it. I was like, Dean Winchester, delete that when you get home.
Maybe he's like Jared, who we learned at a recent convention, like, has voicemail messages and emails going back years. So.
Maybe.
But I think he might have kept that, because, you know.
I was like, Dean, you need to lose that.
Yeah, I don't think you need to remember that time, Dean.
No.
Well, maybe he does. Maybe it's a reminder of that place.
Yeah, maybe.
And,
Mine are never to go there again.
It is a bit creepy.
It was weird.
Yeah, and but you know, maybe sometimes at night he still likes to hear Crowley's voice.
Stop it, Jules.
Anyway, then of course we do have the confrontation where Crowley is about to kill Dean, and Amara's like, "Yeah, not having any of that." Lovely scene of Crowley. The hand.
Oh my god! But even the scene with him talking to Dean too, and you could just see Dean sort of at first kind of listening, and then you could see the fear kind of creep seeping over his face as he kind of realized, oh shit, yeah. I'm in trouble. And he looks at Amara over Crowley's shoulder like, shit, help. And you know, like, I thought that was really interesting with Crowley, like, you know, I came at peace with the fact that I couldn't kill you, but you know what? I think I might kill you today. And it was cool. And I thought, well, this is great, because that relationship that we have seen, and then we saw turn on its head a little bit at the beginning of the season, when in the second episode, when they had the fight upstairs, it's totally changed. And I think there's no doubt now that Crowley's miserable at the moment and sad. And depressed, possibly.
Well, yeah, it'll be interesting to see, you know, if that alliance or whatever it's been...
has to come back into play because of reasons.
Yeah, so, because again, they'll, you know, may both be on the side of wanting to get rid of Amara. So who knows?
Who knows? But then we had that... I thought that was great, though.
Wonderful, wonderful scene between Amara and Dean, which was just riveting. And I saw some people describe it almost as if Dean was almost hypnotized by her.
He hardly spoke. Once he was in that situation, the only thing he asked her is, what was her plan for, you know, what was the plan? He didn't speak before at anything, and she just spoke. But she looked like she could have dissected. It was it wasn't cold, but that fascination was so intense. It was I just felt like she could dissect him, you know, and just kind of pull him apart bit by bit just to see how he works or something.
I think I described it as someone being fascinated with a beautiful butterfly, but they could also be the person who would want to preserve that butterfly and, you know, pin it to their killing board. It really reminded me of Hannibal and Will Graham from the Hannibal series, because the relationship there was one where, you know, Hannibal is, you know, this psychopath, and his fascination with Will Graham is someone who is full of feeling from someone who has no feeling. And, you know, there's a parallel there. And often the way Hannibal looked at and related to Will was like, you know, in the case of Hannibal, almost did want to literally devour him, but it was this sort of, he was drawn to, you know, Will as this example of creation, if you like. And, you know, that's what we're seeing of, and it did remind me of, you know, really early on, Cass and Dean, you know, when Cass is getting to, I think it was the second episode of season four, you know, Are You There, God? It's Me, Dean Winchester, and that scene in the kitchen, and you have Dean being terrified of, you know, being face to face with an angel, and Cass, you know, being slightly wrathful at that time.
Both
then and later on, the iconic, in the Halloween episode, the iconic scene on the park bench, you know he's fascinated and drawn to this amazing creation, and I think we saw that with Amara as well. You know, here is something that happened while she was locked up, and that was creation on Earth, as we find out, by her brother.
I know. Let's face it. I know. It was like, I went, oh, shit. But I was going to say, let's face it. That is, you know, if that was the first thing that you saw, the first thing of God's creation that you saw, you would be pretty damn fascinated. I mean, that's just not even sort of, you know, but I mean, it's serious. I was like, well, you know, you know, it'd be different if it was just some, you know, dude or whatever, but it's like this guy
He looks Winchester.
Dean Winchester, and you'd be, yeah, I totally get it. But yeah, that the reveal, I didn't see the God Sister thing coming to Jules. Were you in there thinking? I didn't think not a sister.
As God's sister. I was thinking she would be some, you know, feminine type deity or something.
Yeah, I thought that. I didn't think related to God because I've never really thought of God as having siblings. And then the question comes, well, who are their parents?
But you could have thought that without him having a sibling.
What?
Well, the fact that he has – the question – does God have parents, exists, he has siblings or not?
Well, no, it didn't for me until hearing about the sibling.
And let's face it, depending on what you believe, he had a son, so, you know, well, that's family true. Things there.
That's true. That's true. He did have a son. I don't know about that. No.
And as I said to someone, it's...
it's not really my bag.
Well, it's interesting that it's only the Abrahamic religion, so Judaism, Islam, and... what's the other one? Christianity. can never remember them. But most other world religions that I know of have whole families of gods and goddesses.
Yeah, of course they do. Yeah,
people, people will be familiar with Greek and Roman mythology. I mean, that's all about families of gods and goddesses. You know, it's really only those Abrahamic religions that went for the nuclear family, if you like.
Yeah,
like the sick father and his son. And whatever the Holy Ghost is, I never understood that. Yeah. But yes, yeah, so I think it's genius. I really do think it's genius.
And it also ties so tightly into the theme of the whole show, this family and the brothers and how, we've had one brother betray another brother, choose something over the other one. You know, we've had the Winchesters go down the road because
we've
chose
had the Cain and Abel parallel. We've had Michael and Lucifer parallel. Yeah.
We've had Lucifer and God choosing,
one son man,
or also mankind over Lucifer, essentially, which is what happened with the darkness. He chose to create mankind over his sister.
Yeah, I'm sure there's more to that story to find
sure
out.
Sure
but yes, and interesting that we finally have, a female sibling in that equation.
Yes, that's true.
And I can't wait to find. Like I was fist pumping because I just think it's an amazing reveal. It's a wonderful idea. It opens up, so much. And as you know, we knew that they had said, the little bits that we'd had before the season started that about things being epic and that they were going, off book as far as religion was concerned.
It's like Big Bang epic. It's like,
I don't think they could have done any better. That's just an incredible reveal. And of course, it makes you think, how amazing was that song at the end?
I know.
Street. That was just amazing. I was at that point, I was about to hit the replay button.
Because I mean, Sam had the vision, and then we didn't really see the play out of the vision until we had time to have a moment with Sam at the end, and then we actually see what I assume is the cage suspended by all those chains, which is how Dean was suspended. You know, that very much looked like with the thunder and the lightning and the chains, very much I watched that the other day. It was so ordinary. I hadn't seen it for a long time. But Dean was all trussed up like that and there was all the lightning and all that stuff behind it. It was incredibly similar to Dean's hell in that we saw him in.
Aesthetically,
yeah, at the end of season 3.
Very luckily, touch wood, the Super Wiki is very wank-free environment. One of the only large arguments that has been on the wiki over the years, and it's very hard when mythology is evolving to try and not put speculation onto pages, because it's amazing how often you make a leap of logic to say something like, oh, the cage is in hell, when we hadn't actually been told it was in hell.
Like, no.
hell adjacent, or
we
you
don't
around
know.
The block from hell, yeah. or another dimension. And there was at one point a rather large and occasionally heated argument about the location of the cage. Anyway, it always made me smile.
Well,
of all the things for our fandom to wank about, that was one of the better ones.
Well, it certainly looked like it was in a very similar environment to where we saw Dean at the end of season 3 with the chains yeah. and the black empty space and the lightning and, you know, the flashing. And I thought it was amazing. Oh. And then there was some people, I have listened to this 1,000,000,000 times. The Whisper of Dean
yep.
at the end, which is really interesting, you know, like who's that coming from? And I started to wonder if this was like a Sam memory as opposed to anything else, because we saw Sam getting tortured. He had that torture memory.
Yeah, and so then back in the second episode, he had that memory of the cage, or he had visions which appear to be his memory of the cage.
Being pulled apart with wire chains and stuff.
Yeah, and we certainly saw, you know, we saw someone's hand through the cage. Now, was that Sam's? And, yes, was that Whisper of Dean? Was that Sam or someone else?
I don't know, man. Although the Whisper of Dean nearly blew my head off its shoulders. And also, I loved how they closed right. It's so tight on Jared.
Yes.
And all you could hear before we crossed to the beautiful music cue was his breathing.
Yep.
It's really heavy. Yes. You know, like, heart breathing as he realized what he had seen and ran it over in his head and what he heard and what the hell does it mean. And I mean, I love the scene prior to that as well with Team 3 Free Will, and like Dean's going blah 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 blah, and Cass is looking at him and Sam's looking at Cass going, wait, looking at Dean. Everybody's like, Dean's lying again. He's so obvious. He's the worst at it. He's so bad.
He is. But then again, I think he's – I do think he's still
– I just think he doesn't know what's happening. He's freaked out.
Well, I think he has some idea. But again, it's not as easy as and you know, it's complex, I think. But,
yeah. No, I mean, Sam's not coming clean with all the vision stuff either, apart from the Matt Cohen one. But also, I mean, there was the point too where – when Amara threw Sam through the door and wasn't paying attention, Dean actually did leap up and try to go her in that moment, and she flicked him
away. Well, yeah, I mean, that's I thought that was great. That, you know, the one thing that really snapped him out of it was her attacking Sam. So it's like, you know, that's gonna cut through anything.
And I think that's gonna play out. But yeah, it's like the one thing that I think everybody underestimates between those two is how powerful that is. I mean, Crowley knows it.
Crowley knows it, and he's used it. You know, he's used that because he understands it. But I think Amara might pick it up pretty soon.
I think she was like, whoa, shit, what just happened?
But the interesting thing we've got now with sort of the cage. So we've had Sam pray to God, but then we've got him having visions of the cage where we know Michael and Lucifer are. We've got Dean connected to the darkness that we know is God's sister. We don't really know, you know, really why she was locked away and what her mission is, if you like, what she's going to want, other than she's probably pretty pissed at God. And so it's interesting. It's not as simple, you know, Dean's connected to the darkness. Sam's connected.
No, not at all.
It's more complex than that. Then, of course, you throw Crowley into the mix. We've still got Rowena in the wind. I'm pretty sure we haven't seen the last of Metatron. I think Cass is probably going back to watch all of Buffy.
Well, I'd be interested to see what Cass ends up doing, because he really needs to get his mojo back. I mean, he needs to kind of – I think he needs to go and have a little sabbatical to kind of clear his head and stuff. But it will be interesting because –
he needs a clear mission. I mean,
he does.
I think being disconnected from heaven is a huge thing for him. It is like being cut off from family, and it's unresolved. And, you know, I think the fact that he feels you know, that they've disowned him, and that he's probably still, you know, got a target on his back. But the fact that that's unresolved, you know, whether, you know, I'm sure he, you know, I don't think he can settle into Team Free Will while that is still.
No, I don't think he will settle into Team Free Will.
It's obvious that heaven's going to come back into play with what's going on. But I think, really interestingly, I think that's something I feel that Cass needs to
resolve one way or the other.
He needs a mission.
I think he needs – it's almost like he needs to step away from Team Free Will to kind of find himself again and find his angel roots and, yeah, like you say, try and have a clear mission, and it's got, in some way, it's got to be tied to heaven, I feel. But it's, I thought it was interesting too that the demon tablet came back under.
That was wonderful.
I was like, oh gosh, I hope they kept all of Kevin's notes.
But I love it when something comes back into play that we'd all sort of forgotten about. And I'm like, I was actually going to the wiki going, that's right, where did we last see it?
And you know, I mean, that was something that Kevin is pretty much translator, because that was the tablet that had the trials on it. But you know, I don't know, maybe he didn't translate the whole thing. That's why I was like, did they keep Kevin's notes? I hope they kept Kevin's notes somewhere. Hope Sam typed them up and into the Men of Letters records or something. But I thought that was interesting, because they can't actually, outside of what Kevin's already translated, they can't read it because they don't have a prophet anymore. No prophets anymore.
Well, no, but they've still got Metatron out there, remember?
Yeah. He can read it, but he's not going to read it for them if he...
No, but again, I think, you know, there's a lot of shifting allegiances going on here, and I think, you know, we don't, you know, whether there may be a point where they offer, you know, Metatron his grace in order to, you know, read the tablet or something. So, you know, I think there's still deals to be done.
Yeah. I was very excited to see. I love that he said, you're never going to find it. I found it under your mattress.
I was just thrilled that they, you know, that they brought it back into play.
Yeah, me too. So that was really cool. I was really excited by that. It was a very chock-a-block episode. And once again, it was like, I can't remember which one it was like. Was it the second episode? I think we talked about this, how it had this kind of minimalist music, and as we got closer and closer towards the end, the scenes got shorter and shorter and kept overlapping again, you know, so they were doing these soft edits on the audio coming in after the vision or before the vision.
Oh yes, now actually funnily enough, the editor of that episode, James Pickle, got back to me only yesterday about that, because I'd mentioned that on my on the Twitter. I sound like fucking Jensen. sorry, that's how I imagine he talks.
Except you got to sound a lot deeper
on the Twitter.
Let's try.
We do have to mention,
and maybe possibly drunker.
So we do have to mention that, you know, the wonderful fact that both Jensen Jarrett and Bob Behrens tweeted during the episode, and then we had the delight and we had photos of Jarrett and Jensen on the couch watching together, and they were actually watching, like you could tell that
they're watching.
They're pretty hopeless at actually giving us any behind the scenes stuff, and it's just like, oh, this is really good.
Yeah, they get really excited. Jensen got super excited about that music cue because he didn't know it was coming. He thought it was a commercial.
Forget that they haven't seen the final cut.
Yeah.
In fact, often they won't have seen anything since they filmed it.
Yeah.
So I think that was wonderful. And then, of course, we got them drunk live Facebooking.
That was so awesome. oh my gosh, it was just adorable. Out on one of their balconies with a candle. We're doing a séance.
If you haven't watched it, people, it's on Jared's Facebook page.
Jensen's,
and there's also a link on the wiki to a YouTube version if you're not on Facebook. But it was absolutely, absolutely delightful.
I think they were very tipsy. Certainly, Jensen was. That's very cute. Anyway,
it was very wonderful.
Yeah, it was. And like you said, Jules, what a time to be alive!
What a time to be alive! I said, because, like, and other more people have come to the fandom in recent years, and certainly since the advent of Twitter, won't realise. But, you know, the first 7 years of this show, they, you know,
it's like silence.
Well, you know, yeah, we got to see the boys a couple, you know, 4 times a year at a convention.
Exactly. Not every second weekend.
Not every second weekend. And we certainly didn't have them tweeting along while we watched an episode.
Taking photos of each other on the couch.
And then live streaming afterwards. I mean, it's amazing. It's such a different experience. And it's so amazingly lucky. And we've had Jerry Wannick, I'm keeping a storified thing. He tweets out every week pictures of the set. So that whole the amazing set where Cass and Metatron interacted, where there's like a railway carriage into a railway engineering workshop, and just, you know, all that stuff is just, you know, you don't know how lucky you are.
It's very exciting. It's very exciting. It's yeah, it's pretty damn wonderful. We're very, very lucky that they're, you know, and can I say, in its 11th season, we're so lucky to have these guys just so excited that they want to be tweeting and, you know, Facebooking with us.
I know.
Even if they get a little overwhelmed by 9,000 of us. Oh, that's disturbing.
Who are basically all just saying, I love you. So that was okay.
I know. I love you from Brazil. Definitely said that because Jensen commented, oh, Brazil. I was like, oh, my gosh, there must be thousands. I love you from Brazil. Say hi to Brazil.
Anyway, a wonderful, amazing episode. I can't believe we're up to number 6 already. But I have to say, have been amazing at keeping the spoilers under wraps. So, yes, there's been some, like, guests and that we know about.
Oh,
but
gosh,
the actual myth arc, the whole God-sister thing, no one let that cat out of the bag.
No one let that out. That was really cool.
We know nothing about what happens with Cass. We know nothing about what happens with the boys. Even the fact that we now have seen the cage, there's still only rumours about what that's going to entail.
Well, it's really only our speculation, isn't it?
No, there have been a few.
I saw one rumor online the other day about tweeting. Is that the rumor you're talking about? Mm-hmm. Tweeting back and forth between a couple of people?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, got that one.
So, you know, we don't know what's going to happen.
Exciting as all hell. Oh my God, I got so excited.
I know.
I was like, oh shit, yeah.
So we've got we've got 1 week off between now and the end of the year. Episode 9, I think, is the last one for this year.
And Jules, we're going to be podcasting the mid-season finale in the same room again.
Oh, we will be. Oh, I hadn't worked out it was that episode.
Yes, it is. Mid-season finale in the same room podcast in Jules's lounge room.
Oh, my God. How amazing is that?
I know.
And very excitingly, because that will be the week before Richard Speight's directed episode.
Yeah.
And we get to see him at the con that weekend.
I know. We get to see him. I'll get to see him on the Friday night, and which is the night after it goes to air. So that's really exciting.
So that'll be great.
Able to talk to Richard about his ep.
Hopefully we do get to hear a bit about him directing. And then, yeah, and then Amy is down in Melbourne the following week, so we can do a live drunk. There may be video.
Oh, my God, that's right. We've threatened possibly video.
I think we were just threatening ourselves, which is really silly. But, yes, no, very exciting. So, yes, after the 11:09, we will be in the same room able to podcast about it. As far as I know, and I haven't got uber official thought a source for this, word is we'll come back on January 20.
Yeah,
so I saw that feels right, but I haven't.
It does feel about right.
Yeah, but I haven't got an official source on that. So that was taken from places that weren't entirely official. So, yeah,
but that feels about right.
Yeah,
timing wise, yeah.
Yep, so the week of, there's no new episode on the 25th of November because it's Thanksgiving.
Which has actually worked so well for me, I can't even. I was like, woo, that's awesome. I was going to say that one of the things that I'm really excited about, and I actually thought about this at the end of this episode, episode 6, knowing that we've only got another 3 episodes until the mid-season finale, until we're on hiatus, is actually watching the beginning of this episode, first 9 episodes during the hiatus. I'm really excited to do that, in one big hit, because...
That'll be a good binge.
It's a really...
That'll be a caviar binge.
Yeah, it will be a caviar binge, because it's just this such a strong story, and it's just been this wonderfully, an incredibly strong start to the season with this really meaty... story, epic, as you said, story that is so surprising. And, I actually thought that at the end of this, I thought, geez, the hiatus rewatch of the first 9 eps is going to be great.
Yeah.
Yep.
It will be good.
Oh, it's exciting. So exciting.
Okay, everyone. Thank you for listening to our 50th episode.
So
50th episode of Letters, and we'll be back soon.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Women of Letters podcast. If you'd like to contact us, our email is wolspn@gmail.com. You can follow Amy on Twitter @AmyInSydney and Jules @SuperWiki.